The title of today's sermon is Turning Up the Heat. Now, we know that a lot of people make New Year resolutions and they make predictions of the future. And they do that at the turn of the year. Let's begin, brethren, today in Mark chapter 13. We're going to look at a scripture that we know very well. We've heard it many times, but it's important that we touch on these things and bring to remembrance what Jesus Christ would have us remember. We have seen incredible, rapid changes taking place in the fabric of society, especially recently. America has elected an African-American president whose roots are in the Islamic world. There's been unprecedented financial turmoil that has plunged our nation into a deep economic slump. National spending has risen unchecked. In Mark chapter 13 and verse 28, Jesus said, "Now learn a parable of the fig tree. When her branch is yet tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near." Verse 29, "So you in like manner, when you shall see these things," Jesus had been telling them about end time events, "when you see these things come to pass, know that it is near." That's the return of Jesus Christ and all the things that come with that. "Know that it is near, even at the doors." And let me have you turn over to Luke chapter 21, because in Luke chapter 21, Jesus Christ tells us what we should be doing when his return is near. Actually, we should be doing this all the time, but it's a warning for when his return is near. Luke 21 and verse 36, "Watch," it means to be alert, "watch you therefore and pray always that you might be accounted worthy to escape all the things that shall come to pass, and to stand before the Son of Man." Now, we don't pray, "Oh God, please help me to be worthy to escape." That's not what it's saying. It's saying, pray always, and pray to God that God's will be done and all those things. That way you'll be worthy to escape. Now, I believe that the word "watch" has more to do with our individual conduct and behavior than it does with keeping up with world events, watching what's going on all around the world. But, brethren, let's also not be oblivious to some of the major world trends that are rapidly shaping up. I am astounded at what great changes have been going on, not just in America, but all around the world. Can you and I discern what is going on? Can we discern that world events could quickly spin out of control, just like we've seen recently in the failure of large and powerful corporations, corporations that I would have thought were like the Rock of Gibraltar, unmovable. The economy is bad, and some are predicting that it could get worse. Fortunes are being lost in the stock market. Retirement funds are being greatly diminished, even wiped out entirely in some cases. Who would have thought that this could happen to the strongest economy in the world? Just how long have we been saying the economic bubble is going to pop? We knew that you can't borrow and borrow and borrow, deficit spend, and do that always. That's one of those Ponzi schemes that we've seen in the news. You know, that bubble is going to pop. Well, it has. And so, brethren, just get used to hearing, you know, all-time record debt, all-time trade deficit, record unemployment, record foreclosures, record bankruptcies. Just how bad are things going to get before Jesus Christ returns? God is turning up the heat. That means that things are going to get worse and worse. Before Jesus returns, we will see all-time record drought, all-time record infectious diseases, devastating crop failures, unprecedented hunger and starvation, wars and rumors of wars. And you won't be able to read about it in the newspapers because they too will be defunct. Now, right now, for a while, the government will try to maintain its size and its control with ever-increasing taxes and spending. But those measures are only speeding up the downward spiral that we find ourselves in. This is the kind of time when unscrupulous men can seize power. It's times like these when we have seen men like Hitler rise to the forefront of power. Right now, the only light at the end of the tunnel is the return of Jesus Christ. Let's go to 2 Peter. But if it means that we have to go through many trials and tribulation, many people are more comfortable in thinking that Jesus is not going to return anytime soon. Oh, if you ask them, they'll say, oh yeah, Jesus is going to return soon. But if you look at their lifestyle, it is evident that they don't expect Jesus to return anytime soon. They're more comfortable because they don't want to contemplate the perils that we just read about, the perils to come. Nor do they wish to see their contented lifestyles interrupted. Everything is going good, so they want it to continue to go well. And so this is what many people in the Church of God are saying. And in 2 Peter chapter 3, we'll see where Peter characterizes what people are saying today, right now. He's speaking of the last days. 2 Peter 3, verse 3, knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days, that's now, scoffers walking after their own lust and saying, where's the promise of his coming? In other words, they're saying, you know, Mr. Armstrong was saying that 70 years ago. People keep on saying that. We got plenty of time. Plenty of time. Jesus isn't coming back for a while. Where's the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, talking about way back with the prophets of old, way back then, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. It's the same. Nothing's going to change. And Peter goes on to say that they were not living godly lives. And a flood came and wiped them all out. He went back to the time of Noah. And then Peter goes on to say that next time it will be fire, not a flood. Jesus put a rainbow in the sky. No more floods. Next time it's going to be fire. Are we ready for that? Now, I send out a countdown to the return of Jesus Christ each Friday night before Sabbath, with an overview or a synopsis or an outline of the sermon that I'm going to give on Sabbath. And sometimes people respond to that. Sometimes they even respond late on Friday night or early on Saturday morning. Well, I received such a response, and it was written to me, dear. And the man wrote, and this is a man who's been in the church since the 70s. He says, I just want to say that ministers have been using scare tactics for years to try to keep people in line. Fear will not hold people. And so there was something in the countdown that struck him as fear-mongering. Brethren, I hope that you understand that it is not my intention to scare anyone. It is Jesus who prophesied just how bad things would become before his return. Continuing here in 2 Peter 3, in verse 7. But the heavens and the earth, which are now by the same word are kept in store, reserved unto fire. Notice that. Peter says the heavens and the earth are reserved unto fire against the day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men. It seems to me that Peter, under the inspiration of God's Holy Spirit, said that things are not going to continue on and on and on. So, the purpose of this sermon is to demonstrate vividly that all things definitely are not continuing as they have from the beginning of creation. But they are about to reach a resounding crescendo that will soon usher in the return of Jesus Christ. Let's go to Exodus chapter 6. God is turning up the heat. When God was delivering Israel from Egyptian bondage and slavery, he dealt with Pharaoh in a very special way. God turned up the heat more and more as Pharaoh declined to allow Israel to depart from Egypt. Now, understand this. The plagues on Egypt were mighty acts of God's judgment. God was finding Egypt guilty, enslaving the Israelites, but more than that, guilty of false gods. All of the plagues had to do with the false doctrines, false gods, false practices that the Egyptians practiced. We see that here in Exodus 6 and verse 6. Wherefore, say unto the children of Israel, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will rid you out of their bondage, and I will redeem you with a stretched out arm. And notice these last few words in verse 6. And with great judgments. Those were God's judgments against Egypt. Little by little, more and more, greater and greater, worse and worse, God turned up the heat on Pharaoh. Each plague, the frogs, the cattle, the Nile turning into blood, they were directed at Egyptian false gods. And they were being conquered one by one by our God. But notice, each plague grew progressively worse. That's what we're seeing in today's world. God has been merciful. We've had droughts. We've had economic problems. But brethren, mark my words, God is turning up the heat. Exodus chapter 7, just a page or so over. Exodus chapter 7 and verse 3. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart and multiply. Now this word multiply in the Hebrew is rabbah, R-A-B-A-H. And it means to increase exceedingly in magnitude more and more as time goes by. I will harden Pharaoh's heart and multiply my signs and my wonders in the land of Egypt. In the same way that Pharaoh refused to listen, God hardened his heart. That is the way that it is now in this end time. God is doing it this way to make it abundantly conspicuous and clear that what is happening is controlled by God. They're the judgments of God. They are the works of God. Turn over a couple of pages to Exodus 11. Exodus 11 and verse 9, and the Lord said unto Moses, Pharaoh shall not hearken unto you. And God knew it. God had hardened his heart. That my wonders, this word wonders means conspicuous signs. God is doing this so that they'll stand out markedly. That my wonders may be multiplied. That means, as we just saw, increase exceedingly in magnitude as time goes by. That my wonders will be multiplied in the land of Egypt. So we see how God works. This is an example. I wanted to take it from Exodus that shows us how God slowly but surely turns up the heat hotter and hotter. Now God's people were spared. The Israelites were spared while the Egyptians suffered. In the same way, brethren, we understand that some in the church of God will be spared entirely. And yet some will go through more of the tribulation than they would really like to. So let's understand. America and the Israelitish nations of the world today have forgotten their God. He is now out of sight and out of mind, sometimes more than we realize. But because of this rejection of God, God is going to turn up the heat on us. Now, you take the countries of Europe, like France, for example. Many of them in Europe look to Germany as Europe's real leader. Europe understands that Germany has these warlike tendencies. You know, they've seen a German-led empire. Let's go to Isaiah chapter 10. Now, this concept of prophecy that I'm about to touch on, we have it down pat. Plus, Mr. Armstrong told us numerous times to watch out for a strong leader to emerge over Europe. And the same strong leader would bring great devastation on the United States and the Israelitish nations. Isaiah 10 shows that God will use this modern Assyrian emperor I don't know what to call him, maybe a king, a czar. The last one was a Führer. A Führer is just a German word for a leader. But God will bring this modern Führer as a tool of his indignation on the United States and the Israelitish nations. We'll see that in verse 5. Isaiah 10 in verse 5. O Assyrian, the rod of mine anger, God calls Assyria. In other words, God's going to use Assyria as a rod. Maybe your parents went and took a paddle when you were a child. Assyria is the rod in God's hand. God's going to use him. O Assyrian, the rod of my anger and the staff in their hand is my indignation. Verse 6. I will send him, this Assyrian leader, against a hypocritical nation. You know who God's talking about? He's talking about us in America, especially, but the other British colonies, Israelite nations, and so forth, too. But hypocritical nation is God's view of us today. We are a kingdom of idols. It says that in the next few verses. That's what he calls us. But continuing in verse 6, and against the people of my wrath will I give him a charge to take the spoil. That means he's going to come over here and take the good things, the equipment, the hardworking young people that are still able to work will go into captivity, the resources. Take the spoil. Take the prey. Tread them down like mud in the streets, the mire in the streets. Verse 10, drop down a little bit. As my hand has found the kingdom of idols, like we saw in Egypt, Isaiah 10, brethren, I'm not going to go through all of this, but it's a very good chapter for telling us what is going to happen to us. Read all of it. It talks about our reliance on Assyria in Europe, and I'm not sure what that's talking about. It might be that the deeper that we get in debt, we're in hock to them as well as to China and the others. But, you know, we've probably heard 100 sermons and read 100 booklets and articles on the German beast. But this modern beast power, besides dealing with America, as we've spent so much time in prophecy looking at, trying to figure out who he is. Does he come from the a dynasty of Otto von Habsburg, and who is he today? And hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of articles are written speculating on who he is. But the point that I want to make is that this modern beast power is also going to deal with another situation besides the one we just spoke about, the conquest of America. He's going to deal with another situation as well. And Mr. Armstrong could not see this as clearly as we can from our vantage point, our perspective today, because much of this, what's going on right now, has shaped up since he died. Mr. Armstrong made a very astute observation that I was reminded of recently. And I'll go back to this crisis that we have here in America with the finances as an example. Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson found himself in a most powerful position to distribute the $700 billion housing bailout fund as he pleased. He could spend it where he wanted, how he wanted, even give it to the car makers, which the bill before Congress never intended, never brought up. And he can now dispense of these funds in spite of Congress' wishes. Congress can say no money to the car companies, and he can overrule that and do what he wants. He doesn't even have to follow the Constitution of the United States, it seems. So Mr. Armstrong said that in the same way, as you know, Hank Paulson just found himself in control of all these things that weren't of his making, the future king of the North, this Führer, this czar, this Caesar, this emperor, whatever he's going to call himself in the future, he would step into a position of power that was ready-made for him. And we find the world shaping up like that right now. When great corporations are falling and big things are happening, men can rise to power in the vacuum of a control of government and when things are in chaos. At the time of the end, shall the king of the south push at him. So there's going to be a king of the south that's going to push at the king of the north, and the king of the north shall come against the king of the south. Now, I said that that king of the north was going to face another situation. There is a major worldwide war going on, of which we in America are almost oblivious. We're not paying very much attention to it. Now, we've all heard of the war on terror, and I guess maybe we often envision some scattered, radicalized Islamic terrorists that show up here and there to blow up things, you know, capture ships, blow up buildings, and that sort of thing. There's a group that calls themselves Lashkar-e-Tayyaba. You don't need to memorize that. It just means Army of God. They're Islamic terrorists. They call themselves the Army of God. And they have a very specific pan-Islamic vision. Pan-Islamic just means that it has to do with Muslims all over the world. And there are 1.3 billion Muslims, according to the United States State Department. These people are going to bring about their vision through jihad. Now, that is a word that you should know. J-I-H-A-D. Jihad. It means holy war, holy struggle. Jihad is an Islamic term. And it's more than just a war. For them, it is, according to their doctrines, their precepts of their faith, it is a religious duty of Muslims to wage jihad, referring to the holy war on behalf of Islam. And their vision, or their goal, is the recovery of all Muslim lands once ruled by the Muslims. That includes India, Central Asia, Spain, wherever Islam has set its foot. This Lashkar-e-Tayyaba, this army of God, believes that they have been robbed of what their God has given them. And I make a distinction between their God and our God. They are a movement of radicalized Muslims who have a pervasive sense of deprivation and injustice. They have been done wrong. They feel that to the core of their bones. And they are going after those countries that they believe have seized lands from traditional Muslim rulers. Their goal is very simple. They attacked those enemies and the symbols of those enemies. The incredible thing is the attractiveness of this movement to the downtrodden populations of our planet. People by the hordes are joining their ranks. They're not all Arab. They're not all born Muslim. People are moving in to their movement, to be a part of it. They are rapidly gaining momentum and numbers. For example, already the name Muhammad, or Mohammed, as some people would pronounce it, is the most common name given to male babies in Europe. And this surprised the socks off of me. It's the number one name in Britain being given to little boys. Muhammad, number one. And it's number two right now in the whole world, approaching number one. This is a growing epidemic in the world. Now, we here in America, we thought it to be curious when Cassius Clay, most of you will remember Cassius Clay, he was the boxing champion, when he changed his name to Muhammad Ali. And we've been passively blind as to how pervasive the movement is. Now understand this, brethren, either God gave this land of America to us as a national blessing in response to his promises to Abraham, or he did not. This country must worship and honor God, not any moon god with a little g, which the Muslims do. Now, this has happened in my lifetime, in my adult lifetime, but there are now approximately 50,000 mosques in the United States. And Islam is the fastest growing religion here. It's a new phenomenon. 90% of these mosques have been built since 1970. Muslims in America have mushroomed to approximately 10 million. I think if you would go up to most Muslims, and sometimes you see them wearing their burqa or their Muslim garments, especially the women at Walmart or in the stores and so forth, I think that most of them, in their heart and in their mind, are content to be Americans, have a job, and do well. But there is a deeper, basic underlying tenet of their faith which does not meld, does not blend with the American Christian way of life. And what is happening in America is nothing compared to the explosive expansion that has been taking place in Europe. Sharia law. Now there's another word that you should know, brethren. Sharia. S-H-A-R-I-A. Or sometimes it has A-H. S-H-A-R-I-A-H. Sharia law. It was in this news this week in the national news talking about Sharia law here in America. It's Islamic law. It's being imposed on the nations in which the Muslims have expanded. Even British law, which was once entirely Judeo-Christian law, you know, from the time going way, way back. It's been Judeo-Christian. And Sharia law is now moving in to the law that was established at the time of the Magna Carta. Sharia law uses the same legal code that's championed by the Taliban and by Osama bin Laden's Al-Qaeda. It promotes Stone Age family laws that amount to making women property, and it enshrines horrific human rights abuses. The radical Islamists are now venturing beyond those regions of the world and are using Sharia finance to sanitize their hate-filled ideology and spread their legal code, so it slowly takes root not only in Europe, in Canada, but now in America. And that's what we saw in the news this past week. AIG, that big defunct company that had to be bailed out, I'll touch on that again in a minute, was embracing Sharia law. Britain embraced Sharia finance and now has, believe this or not, separate Sharia courts on things like women's rights. When they get a divorce or something, they have their own courts. They don't have to follow the laws of the land. And it hasn't encroached in America as much as it has in Britain and in Europe. Sharia law is brutal and it's repressive of women. It possesses cruel and inhumane killings and mutilations, like stoning to death. They are stoning people to death today. Not here. Not yet. And cutting off their hands and so forth. But brethren, understand this. Sharia law has made its way into America's financial corporations like AIG, which do business internationally. And AIG had to be bailed out by the U.S. government to the tune of about $85 billion. But Sharia law has some things that are attractive to people, and it's encroaching on our system. Now, Sharia law is beginning to touch on every aspect of politics, economics, banking, business, contracts, family, sexuality, hygiene, and social issues, and you're not supposed to say anything about it because it is politically incorrect to speak against it. Let's go to Daniel chapter 11, and I want you to put your marker in Daniel chapter 11. Daniel chapter 11 will be our text for today. Now, here in America, we hardly notice the widespread riots that are taking place in Europe among young Muslims. But you watch the news. They'll go on a rampage, sometimes lasting all summer, tearing things down. They're usually the poor and the downtrodden and so forth. But there are Muslim riots that are extant over much of Europe. They're beginning to overwhelm city government and government resources. And the amazing thing to me is that in spite of that, it is still politically incorrect to even mention this, what is becoming an insurmountable problem. Where does an increasingly radicalized population of over 1 billion Muslims fit into the picture of end time prophecy? Now, this is a question I want you to think about, brethren. This is a reality on the face of the earth. According to the United States government, there are 1.3 billion Muslims. They're forceful. They have an agenda. They have a hostile agenda. Where does it fit into our understanding of end time prophecy? I believe that it behooves us to consider the possibility that this growing Muslim situation will play a part in end time events. Now, Daniel 11 has been addressing events of the distant past that have to do with the king of the north and the king of the south. But here, we come to verse 40. It jumps to the present time, to the present end time. Daniel 11 and verse 40. At the time of the end, that's today, shall the king of the south, now brethren, this is speculation, but this king of the south is possibly a radical Islamic jihadist entity. The king of the south shall push at him, that him is that final end time ruler of Europe that we've talked so much about, and you can put in your notes Revelation chapter 17. Revelation chapter 17, verses 12 to 17, talks about this Führer, this emperor, this beast of power, and so forth. And he gives his power to 10 kings, as we've often seen. They're either kings or they're sovereigns or sovereignties. The Bible's not real clear, but he spreads his power out over those. Continuing in verse 40, and the king of the north shall come against him. This is something that absolutely is going to happen. Thus says the word of God. The king of the north is going to come against the king of the south. It says, like a whirlwind, with chariots, with horsemen, with many ships. And he, we're still talking about the king of the north, shall enter into the countries. Now this is talking about Islamic countries to the south. And shall overflow and pass over. Now that, to me, sounds a whole lot like the German blitzkriegs that we've seen of the past, just the way Germany works. Look at how they went into Poland. They didn't declare war or anything, just blitzkrieg right into another sovereign country. Here's a question I want you to think about. What kind of push, because it talks about the king of the south is going to push at the king of the north, what kind of push is the world of radical Islam bringing to bear on Europe? The answer, in short, is their immigration, their Sharia law, their religion, their culture, which in the long run has no use for others not of their faith. The Islamic people possess an ideology of domination. That is at the heart of what they believe. Like you and I look forward to the kingdom of God, they look forward to domination, putting all of their enemies in submission, actually killing all of their enemies and doing Allah a favor. Early America was different. Early America became a melting pot of diverse, mostly European peoples. That is not, and it's purported that that's what's going on. That's the politically correct thing to say. Oh, they're just going to blend in and add to the culture. That is not what is taking place with the insurgent Muslims. It's against their faith. It's going to change the face of Europe entirely. Not only will the memory of Europe's forefathers be forgotten and erased, their children will speak another language and live under Sharia law. These Muslims openly declare that their plan is to drive modern Israel, the new state of Israel, into the sea. They make no bones about it. They brag about it. Elsewhere, they will build their mosques, change existing laws, and they'll continue steadily to wage jihad against whatever nation they are in. Daniel chapter 11 and verse 41. Let's just go down through here unbroken for just a moment and see what the Bible says is going to take place as we saw in the end time. This is going to happen. We're talking about predictions. Well, here's a prediction that you can sink your teeth in. Verse 41, he, that's the king of the north, shall enter into the glorious land. That's modern Israel and Palestine today. He's pursuing these jihadists, these radical Islamists. He'll go down into Palestine today. And many countries shall be overthrown, but some will be spared. Those are listed. They're Jordanian countries. These shall escape out of his hand, even Edom, Moab, and the chief of the children of Ammon, as in Ammon, Jordan. Verse 42, he, still talking about the king of the north, shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. So we're down into northern Africa. This king of the north is going to push down toward the king of the south, wherever this king of the south resides. Verse 43, but he shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver. This is probably the way that he comes to power, controlling vast trading blocks in a world with a new trading system. And, continuing in verse 43, over the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans, and if you don't picture in your mind exactly where Libya is, it's just next to Egypt, just west of Egypt. And this Libyans includes all of northwest Africa, all the countries like Tunisia and Algeria, and down around Morocco and on down to the Atlantic side of Africa. And the Ethiopians, that's the other side of Africa, shall be at his steps. These are all strongholds of Islam today. Verse 44. But tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Well, I think that has to do with China. 10 or 11% of China was Muslim just a while back. It's growing in China right now. And I think that has something to do with the tidings that this king hears. Tiding out of the east shall trouble him. Therefore, he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and to utterly make, that means make away with, make. He's going to wipe out many. Now, China is where much of the 200 million man army that's spoken of in Revelation 9 and verse 16, it speaks about a 200 million man army that's going to come down from there. Could it be that there's going to be a Muslim revolution in China, or China goes against the great power of what's going on over in Europe? They've been enemies, and when one of them gets strong, they fear domination. All that's shaping up. That's what's happening now. And you and I are talking about it in religious terms of Jesus Christ coming back and taking over all the kingdoms of men. But political rulers in Europe and in China, they think about these. They look at troop movements, and they wonder about enemies on their borders and so forth. Verse 45, and he, the king of the north, shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas. He's in cahoots with the Pope, with a holy man, with the prophet, and he's going to go down and put his capital, his throne, whatever he's going to have, down there between the Mediterranean Sea and the Dead Sea, in the glorious holy mountain, it says. That means it's at Jerusalem. And yet, he, the king of the north, shall come to his end. Okay, right here in verse 45, it jumps ahead to the time of Jesus Christ, and Jesus Christ will ultimately destroy the king of the north. And none shall help him, he says. This Muslim demographic encroachment in Europe is a push, a population push, a pressure bubble that is going to pop as assuredly as the housing bubble pop. It can't grow and grow and grow on top of an ancient and established Europe without something happening. We are witnessing immigration and culture shock of epic proportions descending uncontrollably on the lands that were formerly occupied by the Roman Empire and the Holy Roman Empire. They are not going to just sit back and let the Islamic Muslims come in, take their lands, take their towns, take their country, do away with their culture, and change it to that of the Muslims. Jesus Christ prophesied exactly those events rapidly overtaking us, especially in the West, and the entire world to boot. Now, let's go back up to Daniel 11:36. We went down to 45. Let's go. We're still in Daniel 11. Talk a little bit more about this king. 11:36. And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself. We've seen this in the past. Emperor worship, just like the Caesars of Rome thought they were gods, taught they were gods, and demanded to be worshipped as God. He shall magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods. That's the true God. And he shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished. For that is determined, shall be done. Verse 37. Neither shall he regard it says God in the King James, but it should be gods with a little g, the gods of his father. He's not going to follow in the footsteps of the others. Nor the desire of women, nor regard any god, for he shall magnify himself above all. Man is going to present himself as God. Notice in this verse it says, nor the desire of woman. He's not going to regard the desire of woman. Most of the Roman Caesars were homosexuals. And soon, powerful corporations, governments, politicians, they're going to come to be headed up by this powerful royal, he will consider himself royal, leader, Führer, king, who will incorporate a new military. It'll be a new religious and political system with formidable power, more than the world has ever experienced before. Just a very much a stronghold in the world. Brethren, God is turning up the heat. These things are shaping up as we watch. Nothing is going to stand in his way. In fact, this new strong man is going to elevate himself above the laws of the Vatican. He'll renounce the laws of marriage. He'll reign supreme. He'll be the Tsar, the new Caesar, the Führer, the King of the North. And I believe he'll most likely be a homosexual. I think that's what this reference, he's not going to regard the desire of women's about. He'll be a homosexual, and or he'll favor homosexuals in his military and his staff and cabinet posts over married people. And there's one thing that Sharia law prohibits and hates. It's homosexuality. See, that'll give him the grounds. Even in America, you know, to even mention the word homosexual, it's politically incorrect. It's coming up. It's strong. It's taking the positions. In North Carolina, you can't even get a law passed unless you have the homosexual vote. That we're going to see that with the King of the North. He is going to prosper immensely. You know, get used to the term trillions with a T, as in trillions of dollars, trillions of pounds, trillions of euros. He's going to prosper immensely. But always, power corrupts, and it corrupts completely. It'll greatly corrupt him. This king of Europe, king of the North, with a sick and demented mind, he is going to set out to eliminate, to eradicate, even to annihilate his enemies around him to the extent that the Jewish Holocaust of World War II is going to pale into insignificance. Now, we have seen here in America on the stock market at Wall Street the concept of hostile takeovers of corporations. A corporation doesn't want to be taken over, but because of its financial position and weakened strength, another company comes in and makes a hostile takeover. This new imperial leader at the pinnacle of European power will monopolize, control, and seize the vast majority of the world's precious resources. This great leader will bring together the world's gigantic trading blocks into his possession and control. while all the time growing richer and richer and more powerful. But while that is happening, there's going to be a painful thorn in his side. And that irresistible irritation will be the Islamic population pressure and influence, this growing influence, which is pushing against and inundating all of Europe. Very soon, you mark my words, the inevitable and inescapable death of European culture and religion will awaken a rage in the traditional population of the continent. Islam is growing rapidly everywhere, but Europe's heritage is already being challenged. What will be the ultimate result when it is fully realized that taking all the precious things of Europe, the royalty, the art, the religion, the fashionably elite, education, the aristocratic culture of European history is about to be snuffed out. And the Germans consider themselves to be very aristocratic. When we were looking at Isaiah 10 a while ago, it talked about how the princes of the Germans were better than other kings. They consider themselves to be the uppity-up culturally. All European flavor, which makes Europe European, will be preempted by a substandard, nomadic, backward Islamic way of life. The King of the North is going to mount a worldwide effort to preserve its historical European roots. The King of the North himself will declare jihad on the jihadist. That Islamic thrust is threatening to supplant all European culture, religion, and history. It's about to disappear. He's going to have to take action. That's the way they're going to see it. That Führer, that imperial leader, that beast who will have risen over the nations of all Europe is going to fiercely retaliate against this Islamic incursion and pursue the Muslim followers of Muhammad all the way down to Egypt, as we saw in the scriptures. Verse 38, Daniel 11 and verse 38. But in his estate shall he honor the God of forces. You see, he's going to be very strongly positioned. A God, this is possibly the Roman Catholic Pope, a God whom his fathers knew not shall he honor with gold and silver and precious stones and pleasant things. You know, it would be something to get all the Catholics in the world against all the Muslims in the world. Verse 39. Thus shall he do in the most strongholds, these are fortified positions, with a strange God, whom he shall acknowledge and increase with glory, and he shall cause them to rule over many and divide the land for gain. So he's going to be in control of world boundaries, national boundaries. Now, brethren, some of you will remember from your high school geography and maybe sociology, you'll remember how the North African Islamic Moors, M-O-O-R-S, Moors, moved up into Spain. I believe it was 1711 when they went in. It was early in the 8th century. And they remained hundreds and hundreds of years up until 1492. It coincides with when Columbus discovered America. And those Islamic people stayed in Spain. They brought a Merino sheep. They added to the culture, supposedly. But at the same time, they were killing Jews and Christians by the scores. The expulsion from Spain of the North African Islamic Moors, they were down in Africa. They were the Berbers. These are the people that we saw just a minute ago that were from Tunisia and Algeria, Morocco, and so forth. They were the ancient Berbers and Numidians of Arab stock. When they were expelled by the Crusaders, by the Christians of Europe, they were pushed back into Africa, and Spain doesn't have that Moorish influence near to the same extent today. Much of their architecture remained in Spain. But that eradication of the Muslim influence in Spain will pale into insignificance when the eradication of the neo-Islamic, this new Islamic expansion is repulsed. There is a new Islamic expansion that is inundating, just taking over all of Europe. Those Islamic Moors, when they were in Spain, they slaughtered Christians and Jews by the thousands. And little has changed in 500 years since they left. The King of the North is going to mount a new crusade. I don't know if he'll call it a new crusade. The word crusade means under the sign of the cross. And a lot of comic books, novels, books, and movies have been written around the crusaders. Men marched off to push the Muslims back into Africa, to push them out of Palestine, to recapture Jerusalem for the Pope, and all those kind of things. There's a lot of history about the crusades of old. There is going to be a new crusade, and I haven't heard anybody mention that. Maybe they'll give it a different name. I can't guess what they're going to call it, but it is going to come about. It's going to come about soon. The Bible says that the King of the North shall return. The same thing that the King of the South is doing. King of the South is pushing at the King of the North. The King of the North overruns the King of the South. And it's not just Europe. You know, look at what happened recently with the terrorist attacks in India. India being a Muslim country. In Mumbai, formerly Bombay, the financial capital of India, it's a huge town. It has a population of approximately 13 million people. It's the second most populous city in the world. Here's what happened. And the news didn't cover this very well. But it was Islamic jihadists went in, and they are the ones that bombed the hotels. They came in from offshore. The thinking is that they came from these Islamic Army of God camps over in Pakistan. But they made great effort to spare the Muslims. The Muslims have been being killed by the hordes over in India. There are a lot of battles going on. You can read about Kashmir, and there's battles all over India. And we don't hear much about those kind of things, but they're going on as we speak. But these Islamic, they singled out and they mutilated the Jewish people in that town, in Bombay, in Mumbai, before they murdered them. They horribly mutilated. There is a hate for Israel. There is a hate for Christians by these Islamic jihadists. Historically, and brethren, we have seen this, and the Germans have a reputation. It has been demonstrated that the Germanic race of people consider themselves to be a notch above the rest of men. And they have an ingrained desire to spread out into more living space, the living space of other nations. That's what World War II was about. The Germans actually believed in Lebensraum. It's a word that means we need more living space, and we have a right, a God-given right to the living space, and so we can take whatever countries we need. And it turned out to be nothing short of world conquest. The Aryan nation would, put to the sword all lesser peoples. And I can only hazard a guess as to what would have happened, no God in the picture, if they had wiped out Britain, wiped out the United States, and then been allied with the Japanese. They would have turned on the Japanese like a dog turns on a bone. They had no love for the Japanese. They were just allied with them. We have seen this trait in the Germanic peoples. This developing conflict between Muslim immigration, and I've painted that picture, this great, big, growing monster that is inundating, overcoming Europe. It's getting bigger and bigger, almost like a cancerous a cancer that is spreading through a patient. This developing conflict between Muslim immigration and German ingrained territorial aggression are like two colliding tectonic plates. If you don't know what tectonic plates are, that's the current theory that the Earth rides on the crust of the Earth, these tectonic plates, and when they collide, they push up mountains like the Himalayas or, you know, the Sierra Madres or something. That's where two tectonic plates are running together, and it's a great catastrophic thing that takes place. What is going to happen when this immovable force of this end-time Roman emperor, beast, Führer, who is all-powerful and all-wealthy on the earth, is going to deal with this Muslim religion immigration problem that's pushing at him? It is going to be terrible. It's going to result in the clash of two titans. The result will be Islam vanquished as he pushes down all the way to Egypt, as we saw in the scriptures, and Jerusalem ends up being surrounded by those that are in control. Now, Jesus Christ tells us, he says, when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, you know, and then he says, let the reader understand. And there's a parenthetical inset there. Oh, we don't have time to go there. We'll go ahead and close in a moment. But you can understand that these great European powers, and you know, I don't know how it's going to work out. I don't know if the League of Nations, the United Nations, NATO, I don't know how those things are going to work out. The Bible doesn't spell it, but it will be led by this one man who has all of this power and wealth and fortified positions. He's going to go down to Jerusalem between the seas, between the Mediterranean and the Dead Seas, and Jerusalem will be surrounded by those who will have recently been in control of all Europe. Let's close with Daniel 11 and verse 45 once again, because this is the way it's going to end up. And he, the king of the north, shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas in the glorious holy mountain, that's at Jerusalem. Yet he, king of the north, shall come to his end. Brethren, don't turn there, but put this in your notes. 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 8. You can all go all the way back to Daniel when the stone, not made by hands, crushes the great image in his feet. 2 Thessalonians 2:8 also put Revelation 19 and verse 20. It talks about how Jesus Christ will conquer. All of Revelation 19 talks about how Jesus Christ is going to subdue all the kings of the earth. And this will be the end of the Führer, the emperor, the king, the czar, whatever he is. It says, and none shall help him. So brethren, I hope to instill in you a desire to watch what's going on around the world. Never neglect watching your own attitude, watching your own behavior, watching your own walk with God. But at the same time, be aware that there is a tremendous pressure that is building. World conditions are rapidly changing. You know, look at it how it is today. Some people have a job one day and they have none the next. You know, there's no steady state. There's nothing you can depend on. In the end time scheme of things, that same scenario is going to apply to the whole world. Worldwide governments and nations are changing rapidly. People can take over. People can rule. New people can rise to power and govern. Keep an eye on that. At the same time, the most important thing is to draw near to God, to be the people of God. So, brethren, in closing, let's watch. Let's watch closely. Let's draw near to God, because he's turning up the heat.